Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking with Amy Ora Ewing, frequently asked questions about the Bible. If you've got one, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727 in about 10 minutes. Audio open lines with President Bush speaking briefly on religious freedom in China. There's another place to watch religious freedom. And then there is, we're going to have a little bit of open lines on this question of men in church. Now, we've talked about it before several times, but I want to hear from you again on this. How do you account for fewer and fewer men in church? I think I go to a church that is somewhat unique. I was looking at this on Sunday. Because we came in late, we sat in the back. Just the way it is at my church. All the back seats are still open. That's also very unusual. We sat in the back, very back row, and I can actually look out and see. I wasn't wasting a lot of time counting, but an awful lot of men and an awful lot of women, and it seemed about a 50-50 cut, and that's not normal for Sunday morning. It's more 60-40, and that ratio is widening. How do you account for it? Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. That question during audio open lines. Amy Ora Ewing is our guest. She's author of the new book, Is the Bible Intolerant? Let's deal with that one. Is the Bible intolerant? It seems to make a lot of statements that really offend our open minds nowadays, Amy.
Yes, I think that's a great question, and certainly that's the perception of people about the Bible and about Christianity in general, that it's intolerant because it claims exclusivity and it claims to be the truth. I suppose I would want to say, what's our definition of tolerance? It's become this almost kind of godlike word in our culture, that to be a tolerant person is to be a good person. Well, tolerance means to be able to put up with something that you don't agree with. It's to tolerate, if you like, that which you don't agree with. And in our Western culture, it's become almost synonymous with saying that all truth claims are equally valid and equally true. So, for example, it's seen as very intolerant in John's Gospel, chapter 14, where Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. That sounds like a very, you know, intolerant statement that somehow Islam is wrong, Buddhism is wrong, Hinduism is wrong, that only Jesus is the way to heaven. But actually, it's not intolerant to make a truth claim if you're able to love people that you disagree with. Otherwise, if that was intolerant, you wouldn't need to tolerate the other view, if that makes sense. So I suppose what I would say is you can make a truth claim, you can make an exclusive truth claim, or you can believe one, i.e. what Jesus says, without necessarily being intolerant towards others.
Do you think that Christianity is singled out to a certain degree for this charge of intolerance because there are other religions that to one degree or another make exclusive truth claims? They make claims that by logical necessity exclude other viewpoints, but it seems as though Christianity is more or less, well, not completely singled out, but it does come in for more of this charge than other world religions.
I definitely think that that's the case in our Western culture. It's very interesting that Christianity is singled out for much more blasphemy. I mean, I don't know if you've ever heard anyone use Islam's prophet Muhammad as a swear word, but just today walking down the street, I heard Jesus' name used as a swear word. You know, it's certainly true that although Hindus and Buddhists don't agree with one another and have fought wars to, you know, fight against one another, and there are different truth claims, That is never really talked about. Christianity is singled out as the intolerant religion. And I think that's because it is true, and the truth offends people. And this is one of their barriers, if you like. This is one of their arguments against it, precisely because it is so powerful, because it is true.
How do you respond to an objection to the Christian faith based upon the bad acts of Christians throughout history? The two big things that are always mentioned, of course, are the Crusades and the Inquisition. But how do we respond to these bad acts? Undeniably, things Christians should not have been engaged in, or at least the way that they were.
Yeah. Well, I think this is really a question that comes up a huge amount. And my answer to that would be to say we need to look at whether something of these bad actions are a logical, consistent outworking of the worldview, or if they are a very anathema to that worldview. So, for example, we can look at the ideology of Stalin, for example, and we can look at his ideas, and we can see how those ideas were worked out and ended up with a massacre of millions of people. We can look at Hitler's ideology and see, you know, his belief in the Übermensch, his belief that the Aryan race was supreme, worked itself out logically in the end to the killing of others. When we come to look at the Christian faith, what we see is statements like Jesus saying to Peter, put away your sword. You know, we see this amazing call of Jesus to his followers to take the good news of his death and his resurrection, of his forgiveness and his love for the world into the very ends of the earth. So we have to ask ourselves whether trying to convert people at the point of the sword is a logical outworking of that or not. And I would argue that it isn't, that it's an aberration of that idea. And I think it's really important and really interesting that even during the Crusades, there were Christian leaders who preached this at the time, who said, you know, this is wrong, this is not actually what the Bible teaches. People like Francis of Assisi and John Wycliffe and others. Excuse me.
So last night we were talking with H. Wayne House, and he said his response is often to the kind of Crusades and Inquisition charge, look, Christianity is at its best when it acts consistently with its founder, Jesus Christ, and other world religions are often at their worst when they act consistently with their founder, Islam being an example there.
Yeah.
What do you make of his observation?
I think that's a very interesting observation. You see, recorded in the Hadith, that's the kind of writings about the life of Muhammad, amazing stories about him leading raids and leading others in the killing of people. When you look at the person of Christ, you see Jesus laying down his own life, being killed for other people, and the contrast just speaks volumes.
When it finally, when it comes to the hot issues of the day and the Bible, there's probably none hotter than the issue of sexuality, and the almost conventional wisdom on this, and so few refute it, is that the Bible is backward. And when it comes to the issue of human sexuality, it is positively out of date.
Mm. Yes, one hears this all the time, that the Bible is out of date. I think it's amazing, though, when you look at the context into which the Bible was written, that homosexuality was very prevalent in the cultures into which the Bible was written. So the Greco-Roman culture accepted homosexuality as a moral, perfectly acceptable way of life. In the same way, the nations in the Old Testament around the nation of Israel, whether it was the Assyrians, the Egyptians, the Philistines, they all bar none accepted homosexuality as a perfectly moral choice. So what we see in the Bible is an alternative to that. Even then, it was countercultural. It's not that the Bible took on the culture that it was written into. It was always countercultural.
Amy Ora Ewing is our guest. Amy oversees the apologetics training program for the Zacharias Trust in Europe, and she is author of the new book, Is the Bible Intolerant? She's joined us to talk about some frequently asked questions regarding Holy Scripture. Amy, I hope your voice improves a little bit there. Thank you very much for being our guest, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, we've got open lines ahead for your questions and your comments running through pretty much the rest of the program until we get together with Uwe Simonetto here in Studio A in the last half hour of the program. A couple things to deal with. First of all, we're going to hear from George W. Bush. He had a few things to say last week when it comes to religious freedom in China. That needs to be an issue for him to take up. We'll see what he has to say here in just a moment. I invite your questions and your comments. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Also, Pope John Paul II, about 1 year ago, passed away. And that anniversary is being observed in a number of ways, especially at the Vatican. We're going to hear a piece on that as well. I got a question coming up here. I want you to think about this and give me a call a little bit later. The question has to do with the absence or the relative absence of men on Sunday morning in church. We've talked about this before. I think there's more to say about it. How do you account for the relative absence of men in church? It was about 15 years ago that the Promise Keepers organization decided they had the answer to this question. But over those 15 years, with the waning success of Promise Keepers, that doesn't seem to have done the trick. We'll hear from a few advocates for that way of stemming the hemorrhaging of men from Sunday morning pews a little bit later in the program, and I want to hear from you as well. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Well, President Bush spoke last week at Freedom House in Washington, and he talked about the issue of religious liberty in China. President Bush says that he'll talk about the importance of religious liberty when Chinese President Hu Jintao visits the White House next month.
Anxious to talk to him about the evangelicals' concerns inside of China, reminding him that a whole society is one that's just more than open markets.
Okay, that's good to hear that the president has decided that religious freedom is something he needs to discuss with the president of China. A rare opportunity. This week holds that opportunity for him. How important is this issue to you? China has about one-third the world's population. So just think of that in terms of raw numbers. It's a lot of people. A lot of people. Without any real religious freedom. Now, most of the time we've heard about this in the past when it comes to Falun Gong. It's a cult. But they have been the targets, along with Christians too, but mostly in the news we hear about Falun Gong, they have been the target of real persecution in China. If you are a Christian in China, you can go to church as long as it is a state-sanctioned church, a state-approved church. Otherwise, you can't go to a church. Well, you could meet in a house church secretly, but technically, you're breaking the law. Here's President George W. Bush again. He says he's not going to shy away from talking about religious liberty with China's president.
I don't hesitate to talk to him about my visits with the Dalai Lama, who is, comes and sees me in the White House. Nor do I hesitate to talk about the concerns of the Catholic Church.
Now, those concerns are legitimate. If it's religious freedom for one, it's going to be religious freedom for all. So the Dalai Lama has his concerns about the Buddhists in Tibet, who have a pretty hard time of it there. Now, what are we trying to do? We are trying to pursue an open door with China. But there's a long way to go. Really, one of the last and certainly the largest genuinely communist state in the world. There's South Korea, there are a few others as well, but China takes the cake with all of them. Has it come a long ways when it comes to their economy and opening their doors to our trade? Sure. But what is that if religious freedom, one of the foundation stones of all human rights, does not prevail? Here's President George W. Bush again. He says he's not going to hesitate to call for international religious freedom.
American presidents ought to confidently use American influence for the good of the world. And that includes demanding universal liberty and human rights and human dignity.
Now, if with that comes more than just, well, we will have religious freedom of a kind, I'm very happy to hear this from the president. Should we make this a condition of further better relations with the largest nation on the globe, China? Or should we say, look, as long as you continue to buy our stuff, and as long as we can continue to get your stuff at cheaper prices, we'll just let this religious freedom thing simmer on the back burner? What do you expect the president to do? How earnest do you expect him to be in pressing the issue of religious freedom in China. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Think about that and give me a call. It's open lines, issues, etc. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We take it for granted here that religious freedom prevails. I think it's an understatement to say we take it for granted. I can go any place, I can stand any place, and I can say anything I want to. This radio station can own a license to the public airwaves and limited only by FCC regulations, which are not that stringent, and only by the terms of our license, when we can broadcast, how powerfully we can broadcast. We can broadcast any religious viewpoint we want. Any. And we are unencumbered other than that. The only thing holding us back is the support of the listeners. That's it. And that's repeated again and again and again, more than 1,000 times across the United States, not to mention countless churches and other enterprises. It's an unparalleled level of religious freedom. And we all operate under its benefits. And yet most of the world's population, if you count China, the Islamic nations, most of the world's population doesn't. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Well, crowds gathered in St. Peter's Square to remember the late Pope John Paul II. The events are scheduled all week to remember the pontiff's passing. Let's hear this report from the Associated Press.
Tens of thousands fill St. Peter's Square in Vatican City to prepare for an evening vigil to remember the late Pope John Paul II.
L'amato Papa Giovanni Paolo II.
Pope Benedict XVI praised the late pontiff in his weekly address, saying John Paul lived out his mission to guide the Catholic Church until the very end and left a profound mark on all of humanity, even non-Catholics.
I'm not a Catholic, but I still appreciate everything that the Church does and the thoughts of the Church. So particularly John Paul touched people who weren't Catholics, or he touched people from all the world, which was great.
A vigil will begin Sunday evening, and Pope Benedict will address the crowd at 9:37 Italian time, the exact time John Paul passed away.
Now, there's someone else who knew how to address the issue of religious freedom. That was Pope John Paul II. He was kind of the first thoroughly modern pope that we had. And he was one of those guys who very deftly, elegantly, almost without skipping a beat, was able to speak to church and to state without ever breaking his stride and address issues like religious freedom. Now, Pope Benedict XVI, at least theologically, holds many of the same viewpoints, as far as we can tell, as Pope John Paul II. Be nice to hear him speak on religious freedom as well. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Whether we're talking about nation building in Afghanistan, where the latest issue of religious freedom came to the fore with this Afghanistan man, he converts from Islam to Christianity, and then, after being sentenced to death, is saved only by being permitted asylum in Italy. And they let him go because they didn't think he was of sound mind. And it didn't do one thing to solve the issue of religious freedom, a basic conflict between the Iraqi constitution, which recognizes universal freedoms like religious freedom, but also allows local Sharia law, religious law, Islamic law, to overrule the constitution when it conflicts. When the two are in conflict, Sharia law wins. That's far from fixed. And then we've got to talk about religious freedom in Iraq as well. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I was watching The Sopranos last night. Interesting episode. Tony Soprano got shot. Okay, I'm not telling any stories out of school here, so if you're waiting to see the thing on DVD, just close your ears. He got shot in the hospital, in a coma, comes out of his coma. Who should come and see him but the obligatory Christian? I think Tony's supposed to be Roman Catholic. The smiling evangelical. If there ever was a picture of a smiling evangelical, this was the guy last night on The Sopranos. And he came in, and he wanted to pray with Tony. Tony's about to have his incision sewn up, and it's a little risky, but, you know, after coming out of a coma, they were worried about him. And what did he cite as a reason why Tony should allow him to say this prayer in his hospital room? He said, you know, even if you don't believe, prayer has been shown to further people's recovery in the hospital. Just let me pray with you. I mean, couldn't hurt. Well, there's a new study that finds that prayer had no impact on heart bypass patients. Let's find out more from ABC News.
Some 80% of us pray daily, and 6 in 10 Americans say they have tried prayer to alleviate pain. But does it actually work? Well, there's a brand new major study out this morning in the American Heart Journal, and it's raising some new questions. All over the world, all different religions, people are praying for themselves, for their families, even for complete strangers.
But I definitely believe that prayer and intention matters a lot.
I come to you with a request.
It's difficult to measure the results of prayer, though some studies have shown that personal prayer can calm you, even lower blood pressure. But can you be healed if someone in a faraway place is praying for you? It's called intercessory prayer, where people pray from a distance through their thoughts and intentions. And now, the results of a brand new study, the largest and most comprehensive research ever done on intercessory prayer, show perhaps some unexpected results. Patients who are being prayed for actually did a little worse, and the researchers are not sure why.
It's paradoxical, because when we designed the study, we had thought that individuals who were certain of receiving intercessory prayer would fare better than those that did not.
The study followed 1,800 heart surgery patients at 6 different hospitals. One group knew they were being prayed for. Another group didn't know they were being prayed for. And a third group that wasn't being prayed for at all. Meanwhile, far away, 3 different Christian groups prayed. Of the people who knew they were being prayed for, 59% developed complications after surgery. Of the people who did not know they were being prayed for, only 52% developed complications, about the same as those who were not even prayed for at all. For Father Dean Merrick, the study, no matter how comprehensive, does not influence the way he feels about prayer's healing power.
We weren't surprised so much, but I think other people might be and might misinterpret and say, oh, prayer doesn't work. Yeah, it works marvelously well.
We may not know exactly what it is that prayer is doing or how it specifically is impacting the people that we're praying for, but we do know that it is an important part of the way that we practice our faith.
All right, there's the piece on prayer. Apparently not as effectual as previous research seems to have indicated. Prayer's healing power. You know what kind of annoys me about pieces like this? It's not that they're doing the study. It's that they talk about prayer itself having some sort of a power, or they try and figure out why does it work psychologically, physiologically, completely ignoring the object, the one to whom we pray.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
God calls men of all ages to serve as his pastors.
Professor Rick Neufer, coordinator of the Alternate Routes to Ordination at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
I am privileged to work with many older men who desire to serve the Lord in the ordained ministry. The Alternate Routes program provides a way in which experienced laymen, teachers, principals, DCEs, and other commissioned ministers can receive seminary training in a shorter period of time than in the Master of Divinity program. Although no degree is awarded in the Alternate Routes program, Alternate Routes students still serve a vicarage as part of their program and receive all the theological education they will need for ordination. The churches of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod are filled with people of all ages. Thus, the church needs pastors of all ages. Have you ever thought about the pastoral ministry but have said, I am too old? Think again.
Concordia Theological Seminary, www.ctsfw.edu.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Terry Phillips, sitting in for Bob Dittmer. According to New York Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney, pregnancy resource centers lure women away from Planned Parenthood offices by masquerading as family planning clinics. Maloney introduced legislation last week that implies pro-life pregnancy centers are engaged in false advertising, Kim Troby has reaction.
A spokesman for Carolyn Maloney's office couldn't think of any specific examples of deceptive pregnancy centers, but said there is one instance where a colleague reported she thought she was walking into a Planned Parenthood clinic in Florida, but found herself in a pro-life pregnancy center. Kristen Hansen with CareNet doesn't think this bill will fly.
Because they don't really have a leg to stand on. They don't have any examples. And that this appears to be a way to engage in scare tactics.
She says pregnancy centers are upfront with letting women know they don't provide abortions. Jorel Godsey with Heartbeat International says if anybody is being deceptive, it's Planned Parenthood.
I would question whether or not it's correct advertising for an abortion provider to describe themselves under the family planning banner, an unfamily planning banner. Would be probably be better. The centers are very much about family.
Kim Conroy is with Focus on the Family. She thinks the pro-choice legislators are under pressure from Planned Parenthood.
More and more women are choosing life, and therein lies their problem, is that they're losing huge amounts of money every time a woman chooses life over abortion.
She encourages all pregnancy centers to continue offering women services by helping them choose life for their baby. Planned Parenthood did not return our phone calls. For Family News in Focus, I'm Kim Troby.
In 2002, the New York Attorney General charged that pro-life pregnancy centers were misrepresenting their services, but charges were dropped due to lack of evidence. For Family News in Focus, I'm Terry.
Living Jubilee is a program of interest to people who work or are retired, who have medical conditions or who don't want to develop medical conditions, who spend money or who want to know how to save more, who find people interesting, whether living or historical. Living Jubilee is about vacations and computers and movies and faith. Find out about life on Living Jubilee, live with Paul Clayton and me, Diane Summers, Monday through Friday, 11:05 on AM 850 KFUO.
This year, Mother's Day is May 14th, and our Issues Etc. book of the month for April is all about moms. It's titled Mommy Promises. This picture book for children ages 4 and up costs $12.99 plus shipping and handling. Mommy Promises is published by Concordia Publishing House. 1-800-325-3040. More information is available on our website, issuesetc.org. Our Issues Etc. book of the month for April, Mommy Promises.
More than 90% of American men believe in God, and 5 out of 6 call themselves Christians. But only 2 out of 6 attend church on a given Sunday.
That's Tom Fortson. He's president of Promise Keepers, and he's offering some statistics on church attendance for men. Now, in the United States, if people from Europe and elsewhere will tell you, the United States still has a very healthy male attendance on Sunday morning. 40%. 40% as opposed to 60% female. But that number of men attending is steadily dropping on Sunday morning. Elsewhere, we're talking like 20% in European countries. Maybe that's the shape of things to come. So, what do we got? We got men believe in God. We got men who believe in Jesus Christ, think of themselves as Christians, but not going to church, and in fewer and fewer numbers. Now, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about it in a different time slot. We know that many of our listeners that are male are listening right now, starting to listen right now at 4:30 until the end of the program, getting in their cars, going home from work. So I want to get a male perspective on this. Why do you think men are going to church in fewer and fewer numbers? I mentioned before that my congregation where I attend is perhaps an exception to this rule. As many men as women as far as I can tell, and pretty healthy male population there. But generally speaking, and the statistics don't lie, George Barna has noticed it, everybody else has noticed it, something's happening on Sunday morning that men are less and less interested in. How do you account for it? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Some months ago when we talked about this, one possible explanation that I offered, and some people actually thought that this was an explanation, was simply that women are more spiritual than men. Men are buffoons. They're spiritual buffoons. They're all like Ray Romano. Yeah, they go to church because their wives make them go to church, but they're not really invested in it. Is that the explanation? You know, this really has a bearing upon the future of the church, because the single statistic, the single factor that has the most effect on whether or not children will grow up to be church-going adults is not whether mom goes to church, but whether dad goes to church. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's hear from both men and women on this issue, the fewer and fewer men in church. And let's start with Mary calling from her car. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
Hi, Mary.
Hi.
What's your question or comment?
Well, my comment is that I believe the men and women have forgotten God's word, and they don't know God's order in things. And the men have, the women have kind of taken over they're exercising authority over the men. And in church, they're very active and all, sometimes to the neglect of their own families. In my 74 years, I've observed this kind of thing. And if their husbands are maybe not as strong, they don't let their husbands, they just say, I'm going to do this or that, and then they go on. But so the women have kind of taken over, and the men have kind of brought this upon themselves, I think, because they have not recognized God's order and been the leaders in their home, and they have not accepted this responsibility. And they've almost forced the women in many instances. I've heard this story over and over from many different women and other speakers, you know, that spoke of their conversations with other women, and that the men refused to take the lead, and they force the wives to take the lead, so the women just go right ahead, you know. And the women's livers and everything, the men are feeling, I think many of them are feeling kind of, you're going to do it all, I won't do it, you know.
Mary, thank you for the call. Now, there's Mary's explanation. She says men have essentially abandoned their role in the family and therefore in church, and that women have rushed in to fill the gap, and in many cases, to the detriment of their families. Do you think that accounts for it? Do you think there's anything at church that would steer men away or that would attract women more? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's talk with Jeannie in her car. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi. I just wanted to make a mention that a lot more marriages today are interfaith families. And a lot of times the men may be attending faith at their church and women attending it at theirs. And a lot of times the children go along with the mother more so than the father.
So maybe these men are someplace. They're just not somewhere in church with mom and dad.
And or, you know, it's a lot of times there are mixed faiths where, you know, the husband wasn't as strong of a, you know, maybe an active member in his church. And that's in my family. My husband very rarely worships with us. He does from time to time, and I encourage it and help and try to get him involved, but a lot of times it's Sunday morning, he kind of plays his card
Does he go to a different church than you and the kids?
He is a different, he is Catholic and I am Lutheran, and we chose to raise our child in the Lutheran faith, and she goes along with me, and he attends with me, you know, on a semi-regular basis. I wouldn't say on a weekly basis.
Jeannie, thank you. Thank you. Jeff, isn't that the case with your family until recently? Pop going to a Roman Catholic church, going to Mass on Sunday, and then the rest of you and the kids were all raised Lutheran? I assume you were raised Lutheran, weren't you? No, you weren't. What was it, Methodist? Oh, nothing, just non-denominational. Yeah, it was kind of
Mormon.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
that finding myself.
Okay, that accounts for everything I've suspected up to this point. All right, so Jeannie's theory is that the men are in church. They're just in a different church. Or maybe that just accounts for some of the absence or the apparent absence of men in church. One would think I picture a church that's entirely populated by men, and then there's the one down the street that has very few men, and the women are saying, where are all the men? They're down the street at the other church. That could account for some of it. What about the rest of you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Thomas, first man calling today on this subject. Thomas calling from his car. Hi, Thomas.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah. My opinion, and I'm just talking with a lot of friends that I work with that don't go to church, it's really they look at it as just another social event, and they're so busy taking care of home, and maybe now because of how wives are doing more in the workforce that men have to cook or take care of more. So it's as if, hey, this is just another social event where I don't have time for it. I'm busy at work, and maybe I'm doing more things at home, so we'll just put church on the back burner. And if the wife can go and take the kids and take care of it, well, it's taken care of.
Well, I think you've explained, you know, I thank you very much, Thomas. I see in my mind an old family photo. It comes from my mom's family when she was growing up. There she is, 14, 15 years old. Easter Sunday morning, you know, you go out in the backyard and take the Easter picture with all the kids in their Sunday best. Well, there's Grandma in her Sunday best. There are the six kids in their Sunday best. And there's Grandpa sitting in his lawn chair. He's sitting for the picture, by the way. Cigarette in his hand, fishing hat on, obviously staying home from church that Easter Sunday. That was the way they grew up. He stayed home. They went to church. The man, he viewed it as just another social event he just simply didn't have time for, and Sunday morning was his time to sit in the backyard and think about fishing. Paul calls from his car. Paul, welcome.
Hi, Todd. Yeah, this is a fascinating question. It can't be that women are more spiritual than men, and let's just take another religion. In the religion of Islam, men are overwhelmingly involved. During the Korean War, the allies from the Western nations were shocked to see these the most vicious fighters of all, the Turks, you know, getting down on their knees five times a day to pray. And that was just something foreign to these westernized men. I'm going to go out on a limb and probably get myself in trouble, but do you think it has anything to do with the feminization of the church?
Hmm.
And let me explain that. I should rather put the emotionalification of the church.
Wait a minute. If you're going to coin a new word, let's see if we can... The emotionalification...
Yeah, where the orientation of the church's preaching and teaching has shifted in many cases more towards emotions and feelings. And I just think, as a general rule, men are not into the touchy-feely stuff. And I'm thinking perhaps when the church was more historically grounded in doctrine, using the mind in full service to the faith, and presenting a vigorous, let's just say it, a vigorous, manly approach to Christianity, which is what you get in the Bible, frankly, that men found that more compatible. But I can't explain your grandfather. I guess, you know, I don't know what that means. But
he liked fishing. He liked fishing.
Yeah, well, just some thoughts.
All right, thank you very much, Paul. So I'm going to take his word, emotionalification, and if he doesn't mind, Paul, I'm going to use Mike Horton's term. He talks about Sunday morning being sentimentalized. I think that fits. Sentimentalized. It's become more about sentiment than about spiritual truth. Do you agree or disagree with Paul's assessment of men in church, the why and the wherefore, that fewer and fewer men are showing up on Sunday morning? Has the church become feminized, emasculated, sentimentalized? Tim calls from his car. Tim, welcome.
As a single male that's been into a lot of different Christian denomination churches, I want to see what the difference was in a lot of different denominations. And I feel that it's because men perceive a superficial religiosity going on, and almost to what the last guy said, that Jesus was cutting edge. How did his views fit into society today? And I don't think you can really get that except for maybe on the issue of abortion, which is, you know, an obvious thing where the Lord stands on. But I don't think you get that edge where Jesus would have, where he'd have some condemnation for society on a lot of things that the church lets go, and they just instead put on this religiousness. You know, it's a little bit of piety. It's a little bit of, aren't I holy type thing, you know, and men are kind of turned off. They're looking for the more something really deep to the heart, the truth, you know.
All right. Thank you very much. I think he's chiming in with Paul, the previous caller, that the edge has been taken off the Christian faith on Sunday morning, not just taken off, sanded down, and polished to a glassy surface. It's now so smooth, so slick. There's a reason why men, generally speaking, like sports. because it's messy. Every sport in the world is messy. There are mistakes. It's built into it. There are inequities. One guy's great. The other guy's lousy. If he falls, he gets hurt. He's out of the game. Too bad. A call goes against you. Deal with it. The rough and tumble, this thing of professional sports and even non-professional sports appeal to men. It appeals to some women as well. But a lot of that, most of that, has been taken out of the Christian faith. Let's see what Pam has to say. She calls from her car. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Todd. I agree with Paul, and I think this is a big problem. We've gone soft on sin in the church. We don't want to talk about sin. We don't want to talk about Christ on the cross, the crucified Savior. We sing praise songs that are lovely and fluffy and wonderful, make you feel good, but we don't talk about the hard things, that we're sinners who need a Savior, and a Savior who died, suffered and died a horrible death for us. We see this feminization, if you want, of the church in Sunday school materials and Christian literature and in our worship services. People don't want to see the hard side of the church. And Paul was worried about getting in trouble. Well, here's a woman that agrees.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's see, who's up next? Let's go to Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, to one of our internet listeners. Here's Jeff. Jeff, welcome.
Hey, Todd. How you been?
Pretty good.
I agree somewhat with the feminization being an issue, but I've been hearing it a lot over the last however many years, and I don't think it explains everything. And I'm not sure if there's one thing that could explain everything. I think if you're not genuinely a Christian, you'd would rather just stay home and watch NFL, you know, pregame show. I think there's less society. There's something tied up between masculinity and being a bad boy, you know, just not going to church and just doing your own thing and kind of the loner type. I think there's some of that going on. I think there is some of the feminization thing when you're not presenting a full-orbed Christianity without the rough edges, but I think we're trying to look for one thing where maybe it could be a combination of factors.
Thank you very much, and thanks for listening out there in Valley Forge as well. Let's see. Andy in Kirkwood's up next. Andy, welcome.
Hi, Todd. Well, I have to agree that it's probably a combination of things. One factor, of course, would be the prevalence of divorce and single-parent families.
Oh, that's a big one. You're absolutely right.
If the kids are living with mom, they're not going to be going to church with dad. Another thing that might drive men away from the church would be law-oriented preaching, or perhaps law masquerading as gospel. Men get enough law from their wives at home. They don't need to go someplace and get an extra dose on Sunday.
Now, you're not against the proper preaching of the law, are you?
Absolutely not.
All right.
Now, I, by way of confession, when I was married, oftentimes I would not resist my wife when she had a certain mindset. And that was, on my part, one thing, it was too much trouble, and secondly, it didn't seem like it was likely to do any good. And these are definite failings on my part, and I'm sure was part of our leading to divorce. That's it for me.
All right, Andy, thank you very much. So Andy suggests something else into the mix, and that is, I like the way he put it, law preaching masquerading as gospel preaching. The guy goes in, I don't know. I mean, if you're like me, by the time you get to the weekend, you pretty much had the tar beaten out of you. I mean, it's not that life is really that hard living in the suburbs, but the responsibilities, the expectations, all those things bear upon you. And by the time you get to the weekend, you're like, okay, just everybody, leave me alone. This is why I must take Fridays off to get away from Jeff. I have to. I just have to. It's absolutely necessary for my continued sanity. And rather than take some sort of heavy medication to get me through a Friday, I just take Fridays off. Well, when it's Sunday morning, and I've got, I don't know if any of you know what it's like to have a producer, but it's like having a work wife. And there's nothing wrong with my wife. I love her dearly. It's like having someone who's got a to-do list for you 24/7. Well, if I get to church on Sunday morning and God is nothing more than just a divine producer who's got this to-do list for me to do, oh, by the way, this has to be done, and by the way, you forgot to do that? Look, that's Jeff's job, and he does it very well, and it makes the show run beautifully. But if I get to church on Sunday morning and God is just a divine to-do list, and God has a honey-do list for me, well, here's the Bible. It's God's honey-do list. And I'm a man. I want nothing to do with that. I don't even know if a woman would want anything to do with that. Dennis calls from his car. Dennis, welcome.
Hello, Pastor Todd. Thanks for taking my call. That's good that you do this. Anyway, I've been going around and visiting lots of different churches and congregations over the past several years with my wife. And I've noticed in certain congregations, there'll be just as many men as women. But I think overall, if we look at the demographics and the populations of the United States, there are more men than women in the United States, and that is going to be reflected sometime, you know, or oftentimes in the church, in the church congregation.
You mean more men than women or more women than men?
There's more women than men,
right,
in the population, in the general population. So I guess it would just stand to reason that there are going to be more women in any social setting. There's going to be generally more women than men. I'm not quite sure. You know, if it's any one thing, I have to agree with your last two callers. You know, the single parent issue is also a factor. But I don't know if the feminization of the church, I don't know how valid that is. I'd have to think a little bit more about that, because I'm not quite sure what that implies or what that really means, because a lot of different churches have different approaches and different doctrinal teachings. I've noticed that there was a lot of men involved in Pentecostal churches. And in African-American churches, there's a tendency in certain African-American churches to be predominantly women.
Oh, yes. We talked with Jerry Buckner about this, in fact, and thanks, Dennis. Jerry Buckner pointed out that if you want to see a real disparity between men and women, go to the black church, almost any black church, and you will find a majority, a vast majority of it, filled with women on Sunday morning. You know, there are... Here's something I haven't heard anybody mention. What about the Jesus of Sunday morning? And we've talked about the emotion of the worship service. We've talked about the theology in general. What kind of Jesus are men finding in church on Sunday morning? Ellen calls from Baldwin. Hi, Ellen.
Oh, hello, Pastor. You know, at the beginning of this discussion, you said you noticed in your congregation there's just as many men as women, and I've noticed that in our denomination when I've lived in different areas. And I think part of it might be in the difference in the way men and women think. And I don't want to get in trouble with the ladies, but women tend to function on a feeling level and men on an intellectual level. They want something to feed the intellect. They don't want a spiritual soap opera or feel good theology. They want, feed the intellect with some sound theology and doctrine, which we, thank God, get in our denomination. And I think that might be the difference in some of these denominations.
Hi, Ellen, and thank you. I think there is a difference there psychologically. I think that's what she's kind of talking about, the psychological difference here. One of our callers talking about this in a previous conversation said, women are more relational. It's about the relationship. And with men, it's more about kind of the objective situation on the ground, not so much the relationship. And when we talked about this before, remember one of the callers said, and it was one of our internet callers said, the thing that kept me away from the church is I was tired of being hugged, being mugged and hugged in the narthex when I came in every Sunday morning. It was just too much for me. Lois calls from St. Louis. Hi, Lois.
Hi, Todd. Thank you so much for your wonderful program. I just love it.
Well, thank you.
I can't get enough of it. This former caller talking about what she was saying about the church, I agree with that men are not very into the touchy-feely stuff. I know my husband is not. I've been in Bible studies with him, and if we have to answer questions, and the questions that say, like, how did this encourage you? How did this make you feel? You know, he just hates those kind of questions. He doesn't even want to deal with those. My husband is a man who's dealt with the law all of his life, and he deals in black and white, you know, issues of on the bench. And he looks at things in a whole different way than I do. I really do like the emotional part of it, but it's not about really all about emotion. It's about your relationship with Jesus Christ. And, you know, I have two sons. One is 37 and the other one is 38. The 37-year-old, he professes to be a Christian, but I cannot seem to encourage him to get to church very often. He comes when he feels like it. He's a police officer and can't get there a lot of times because of his job. But I say, Danny, anytime you have a chance, please get to church. I know, Mom. I know, Mom. I know everything that you say that you tell me is true. And he still professes that he has a strong faith and he talks to other people about his faith. But he still doesn't see his need to go to church. And I think that's part of the reason men don't see their need. They don't understand the means of grace. They don't understand the I am the vine, you are the vine, you are the branches concept. They don't understand that without apart from me, you can do nothing. They don't realize that you can lose your faith. You can lull yourself to sleep. You can get absolutely just completely deceived by the evil one. And the evil one is another one of the concepts that I'd like to bring up. People don't fear God, and they don't feel fear of the devil either. They don't understand how he works.
Lois, you're absolutely right. You are describing my hunger is the best cook, right? This was my weekend. When Sunday morning rolled around, I didn't have a big long speech about it before we went to church. We just went to church. But when Sunday morning rolled around, I woke up that morning and I thought to myself, if I don't get to church soon, I'm going to fall apart. I need this. I absolutely need what they give me at church. And it's not the uplift. It's not, I got to go there because it's going to make me feel better about myself. I needed Jesus Christ crucified and dead on a cross for me. And thank God my pastor gave it to me. I'm a sinner and I need a savior. I need Jesus. It's not, I'm telling you honestly, folks, it's not an emotional need. It's not a psychological need. It's who I am and who he is. And I don't know how else to put it. When Sunday morning rolls around, I cannot do without him. Or any other day of the week, for that matter. When we come back from this break, we'll hear from some evangelical Christian leaders on why men aren't attending church. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.